The opinions and statements expressed in the following program do not necessarily reflect those of WWDB, its staff, or management.
Inspirational women are increasingly popular in the news and media, but many go unheard and their stories are never told. Women to Watch with Susan Rocco captures the stories of many women who truly make a difference. Women to Watch is the vehicle for developing new leaders, encouraging younger generations, and in building self-esteem for future entrepreneurs.
Good afternoon, everyone, and thank you so much for tuning in to another week of Women to Watch here on WWDB Talk 860. I am thrilled to be able to be in the studio after driving in and wondering if I was going to make it. Everyone knows we had a major storm here. Not just in Philadelphia, on the whole East Coast. So I have some staff in here with me, and we're going to get through the show. Full disclosure, I'm battling a little bit of a cold, so I'm going to try to get through the hour without having to step out and have a coughing break. But couple of quick notes. One, if you're listening and you want to join in our conversation, we always love to hear from you. You can do so by dialing 888-329-3306. That's 888-329-3306. And be sure to check out our website at womentowatch.net so you can stay up to date on our lineup and all the great things that Women to Watch is doing. I want to give a quick shout out to Jesse and Doug at the Warming Store in Manayunk because I'm wearing my heated scarf today. The engineers take very good care of the equipment and have to keep it very cold in here. So, my heated scarf is keeping me nice and toasty. And it's a great store there in Manayunk if you're in the Philadelphia area. Today we have, two women. We have our, weekly contributor, Dr. Beth Dupree, waiting in the wings. She's, the vice president of Holy Redeemer Health System, a core sponsor of the show. She has her own practice and she's founder of the Healing Consciousness Foundation. And also waiting in the wings is our very special guest today. Her name is Tracy Wilson Rossman. And Tracy is the chief marketing officer of Chariot Solutions. She is also founder of Tech Girls, an incredible organization in the Philadelphia area, promoting young girls in technology. And she's also co-founder of the Women in Tech Summit. So we have a lot to talk about, and we're going to start with Dr. Dupree and catch up on her work with the hospital and her practice and foundation. Beth, welcome to the show.
Hey, Susan. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. I'm struggling a little bit with this cold, but I have everything I need here.
I got knocked out on Saturday. Not only did the blizzard hit, but I had my 24-hour bug on the 24 hours where I couldn't leave the house.
Oh,
which
no.
Which is really funny.
Yeah.
And today got crazy because my partner has it. So she's out sick today. So I was supposed to be on jury duty, but jury duty was canceled. They won't let you out of it. Believe me, I tried every which way but loose, but I had to report. But because the courts were closed today, I didn't have to go in there. So when I called my office this morning, they told me my youngest partner was sick, and she had a whole bunch of procedures and everything scheduled, which is why I'm going to talk to you and then love you and leave you because I have to go keep working.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
It's all good. Patience first. You know how life goes.
That's right. That's right.
I was thinking over the weekend what we really needed to talk about. I'm speaking to my department of OBGYNs, and I'm going to be speaking to our Innovative Wellness Alliance primary care physicians because – this past 6 months has been really confusing for doctors, for women, for anybody who gets screened with mammography. I mean, I hear it at dinner parties. People say to me, well, when should I get my mammogram? Because I hear so many different things. So I figured if I'm going to be spending the time educating my colleagues, that I should probably spend a few minutes educating our listeners because it really is confusing for women now to know, when do you get your first mammogram? How often should you get your mammogram? What kind of mammogram should you get? And do you need any additional studies? So that's going to be my goal in the next 10 minutes. Is that okay?
That sounds great because I'm, it's the truth. It's very confusing. There's mixed messaging from all fronts.
Do you know how often women are supposed to get mammography?
Well, my understanding is once a year.
Okay, so that was pretty much the standard up until about 6 months ago.
Okay.
The initial changes began In 2009, it's with the USPSTF, which stands for United States Preventive Task Force. And the USPSTF came out with their recommendations back in 2009, recommending a baseline at 50, and every other year from 50 to 70, and then over 70 to discuss it with your doctor. They recommended clinical breast exams annually for anybody, you know, that has breasts, and then breast self-exam, they kind of poo-pooed and said you don't need to do it. Well, it was that recommendation that kind of popped me onto Michael Smirkanish's show, because I called in to discuss my feelings about it, and I discussed them so vigorously that I was invited to drive down the next day to be on his show.
Oh, great, great.
So that was the first, like, the kind of zinger that went out.
Mm-hmm.
Since that time, there have been so many studies looking at screening, why to, why not to, and a lot of changes happened. In October, the American Cancer Society, which had been the same as the American College of Radiology, the same as the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, and also the American Society of Breast Surgeons, we had all believed you get a baseline at 40 annually thereafter until, you know, patients are old enough. If your life expectancy is not 10 years, then you stop. So if you're a debilitated 75-year-old, you don't keep getting mammograms. But if you're a vivacious 75-year-old like you and I are going to be, we're going to continue to get them.
Right.
So what happened is, in October, the American Cancer Society changed their recommendations. They changed to a baseline between 45 and 54, and then every 2 years until you get remain healthy, which was a big change. And the same thing in the American Society of Breast Surgeons kind of pedaled back and said, well, consider screening women to 40 to 45, and then get annual mammographies between 45 to 50, and then every other year after 55. And I'm going to be 55 this year, and I don't consider myself old. So the ACR, the American College of Radiology, and the American College of Obstetrics and Gynecology, they stayed the course. They say annually between the, you know, annually beginning at 40 and, you know, until you're healthy. So here's the real deal. The reason why these recommendations changed is because they said that, you know, they know they, you know, everyone agrees that women between the ages of 40 and 49 are at risk for getting breast cancer. They know that getting mammography does decrease the risk of dying of breast cancer in that age group. But there's this whole big thing about this emotional trauma of going through a benign breast biopsy, which I don't really buy that. You know, I don't believe that there is the risk of the radiation exposure. I do not believe that this psychological thing of having, they call them false positive biopsies, but to me, a negative biopsy not having cancer isn't really a bad thing. It just means that your mammogram picks something up. We also know that people who have mammograms and get biopsies, that in the future they're at higher risk because their breasts are proliferative. So I think we're kind of missing the boat here, and I think you and I have talked about this before. The incidence of breast cancer is thought to be increasing by about 50% by the year 2030. So 15 years from now, we're going to have an extra 140,000 breast cancers. So this, to me, is not the time to stop screening.
That's right.
So other things women really need to know. Number one is, you know, I think what's going to happen is some insurance companies may stop paying for annual screenings. And that, to me, is really going to be bothersome. But I think women have to have a voice, and we need to be proactive about this.
Well, and how about the age as well, Beth? You know, we're just seeing so many young women. I always wonder, should we even wait to 40 to start screening?
Well, the problem with doing mammography prior to 40, you know, in some women that are high risk, we would start as early as 30 with women that have the BRCA gene or have other, you know, significant family histories. But the problem is when you're younger and your breasts are very proliferative, they're very dense, so mammography is not as diagnostic.
Oh.
So there is a reason for not doing it earlier.
Okay. I never knew that.
Here's the real deal. There's a process called tomosynthesis. We have this at Holy Redeemer Women's Care in Southampton, where I'm sitting right now, called 3D tomosynthesis. And what it does is it allows us to see things better than we would be able to see with a two-dimensional mammography. The second thing is there's a thing called density in the breast, which is a classification. It's classified in groups of A, B, C, and D. C and D mean that your breasts are very dense, which means that there's a lot of fibrous elements, and it decreases the ability of a mammography to pick things up. So if you're listening to this show and your mammogram report says that you are density C or D, you should also be getting a screening ultrasound called an automated whole breast ultrasound. Our ABUS machine, we have GE ABUS, which is a wonderful, it's a wonderful addition to our screening. And what it does, it allows us to screen dense-breasted women whose cancers are often hidden within the density.
Mm-hmm.
So women that are category C and D that are dense, it can be ordered with your screening mammography. It can be done at the same time. We do it all the time here at our Women's Center. And it's something that women need to know about, and they need to be asking about it. And this is why I need to educate our doctors as well.
Right. Can you send that information to me, Beth, so I can put it out on our social media?
So women can ask for it? Absolutely.
Okay.
You can post it on the website. I'll send you the whole thing because I wrote it out very nicely for the doctors.
Okay, good.
And the other thing is, you know, I saw a woman right before Christmas, very smart, you know, a nurse, knows healthcare, knows her body, knows everything. She said her breast just didn't feel right. She had a negative mammogram. Yes, it was dense. She had a negative ultrasound, did not see anything different. And when I saw her in the office, I knew it was cancer. I knew it was cancer because even though her imaging was completely negative, and this is what women need to know, if there's something with your breast that doesn't feel normal, it's changing, something's not right, and your imaging is negative, you still need to have an evaluation.
Okay.
You still have to go because there are some cancers that hide. They're kind of insidious. A lot of them are invasive lobular cancers, so they're not found on imaging very easily. And the other thing is nipple discharges. When you have fluid coming out of your nipple, whether it's bloody or clear, if it comes out by itself, those are all things that need evaluation. And to me, you know, I think we do a disservice to women when we don't educate them about this.
Mm-hmm.
And I also, you know, my goal is to get all of, you know, all of the doctors that work with us to understand how, you know, these guidelines are so confusing because some women will use any excuse not to get a mammogram.
Right.
And, you know, now we have to be careful because there are some health programs and plans that are, you know, your doctors are going to get dinged if they're ordering studies, you know, that aren't necessary.
Yeah.
And to me, when the obstetrics and gynecology recommendations, the American Society of Breast Surgeons and the American College of Radiology are all recommending this, just because two other organizations that are government driven have changed their recommendations, we need to be careful about how we, you know, when and how we stop imaging patients, because early detection is our best defense, and it's our best ability to get cancer at a curable phase. So.
Okay. All right. Great update and good advice. Yeah,
I know.
I can hear it. That's all right. It's a good cause, and I'm sure Tracy will agree. So,
definitely.
Yeah, let's put that out. Just knowing that they should ask for this particular test alone is a great bit of information. So let's start there.
To me, knowledge is power. Women have the ability to have all of this knowledge about their breasts, about their health,
mm-hmm.
and then they have the power to ask for the tests they want.
That's right.
And I think even insurance companies that may not be wanting to cover mammography annually, when the patient goes in armed with the right information, and I can't always get this, if a patient pays for their insurance, they're the ones with the power because they can walk with their feet and get a different insurance company. I'm the doctor that's on the other end of the receiving end, so the insurance companies aren't nearly as willing to jump for me.
Right. Right.
So
okay.
It is what it is.
All right, dear.
Listen, you're gonna have a great hour with Sue. I'm sorry I'm not gonna get to meet you more, but as Sue knows, patients come first, and today I'm pinch hitting, so I'm gonna go pinch hit a little bit longer.
Thanks, Beth.
All right, take care. I'll talk to you guys soon.
Okay.
Have a great show.
Bye.
Thanks.
Bye bye.
So let me just say again who our special guest this afternoon is. I'm really thrilled to have her with us and talk all about women in technology and young girls. Her name is Tracy Welson Rossman. She is a Philadelphia girl, and she's chief marketing officer at Chariot Solutions, founder of Tech Girls, and also co-founder of the Women in Tech Summit. Tracy, welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. How are you?
I'm great. You and I connected quite a while ago, so I'm thrilled to finally have you on the show and get to pick your brain a little bit about the work that you do, and also share your story, which is what Women to Watch is all about. Find out what led you to this field of technology and helping young women. One of the things I read about in the information you sent to me was that when you were young, you had absolutely no interest in technology. So I'd love to hear a little bit more about that and what kind of precipitated your interest in the industry.
Well, the funny thing is that my dad was a programmer. his first job out of college, even though he was an economics major. He actually used to program on cards, on punch cards, and he was in technology, creating big systems for insurance companies until he retired. So it's just funny that I didn't get into tech until he was well out of tech, and he would come home and tell stories about, like, you know, there's going to be a PC in everybody's home and computers are going to talk, and we were like, what are you talking about?
Punch cards, kids don't know what punch cards are.
So, but I do have to say that one of the things that he did, because I was very interested in a career, even early on, no matter what it was, the women, he didn't work with a lot of women, but one of his very good friends, who he worked closely with through the years, he made sure to bring home. So I would get to meet her and have a representation of a role model of somebody who was a woman who was working outside the home. So it was, I always think about that, like how he was supportive in that way.
Yeah, that's a great example, always, you know, especially from dads, I think, for their daughters.
But getting, I was a retail management major. I worked at Strawbridge and Clothier. I worked at QVC when it was pretty early on. I mean, I guess you could say that's sort of being in tech at that point, but I mean, I didn't really look at it that way. I went on to sell direct mail advertising, basically became an entrepreneur in managing my own territory. Then my husband and I bought a business and ran that for a while. And I mean, we used technology to run the business, but I never really thought about it as, hey, I'm using a computer and this is tech. This, you know, my business is tech enabled. Just never really crossed my mind at that point.
Mm-hmm.
After we sold that business, that's really when my next job was working for a software company, where I met the current core team of Chariot Solutions, and that's when I really became a woman in tech. I was selling and marketing the software product, and you know, it was a much different world than I had been used to previously.
Yeah, and what year was that, Tracy, that you first started with Chariot?
I've got to think back. 99.
Oh, okay. So quite a while ago.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk with you just a few minutes about your years at Drexel. And, you know, of course, I think I mentioned to you, my son is there. He's a sophomore, and how much I believe in the co-op program, right? You know, that real world learning. I think it's even more of an opportunity for young women to be able to be out, you know, working in their field before they graduate. What were some of your co-ops when you were there?
So when I was there, I worked, it was all about retail management. I had worked at a company that, a store that no longer exists, unfortunately, called Nandeskin. That was my first one.
Oh, I remember that.
Oh
my gosh. Yeah. I haven't heard that in a long time.
I got to work with some beautiful clothing.
Yeah.
And then I worked at Strawbridge's for the next, three co-ops, if I remember my math correctly on how many times we did this, and then went directly to them. So I worked in different departments. The funny thing is I think we said, I told you this, but my older son is there.
Yes.
You know, we having hands-on experience, whether they're boys or girls, young men, young women, is really important. And,
mm-hmm.
You know, a definite plug for my alma mater that really got hands-on experience, really good hands-on experience. And I know that my son has had one internship and one co-op experience that has just been great. And it allowed both of us to know, and also my husband is a Drexel grad, so we're sort of, you know, a Drexel family, just having that experience, letting you know that what you're thinking about going into, what you thought about going into, is actually what it really is.
That's right.
And it's okay, you know, and if it's not, if it doesn't match up, it's really okay to change.
That's right. Yeah, it's almost about learning what you don't like than
exactly
what you think you like. My son Christopher's actually working at SAP right now, so he's having just a tremendous experience and really getting to see if the field he wants to be in is the right one for him.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Very important.
It is. Tell me, Tracy, what was the moment, if there was one, where, you know, you decided that we really needed to put together some type of organization, resources, educating for young girls to go into the field of technology? I know, you know, it's typically, and we're always using, you know, a broad, you know, painting with a broad brush when we say these kind of things, but that, you know, most girls don't think it's cool to be in technology. Was there an experience that you had that kind of precipitated your decision to start Tech Girls?
It's not like one particular thing. And it's certainly, there was nothing bad that happened.
Mm-hmm.
I want to make that clear to me, to you, that, that was like, oh, I've got to change this. From the time that I had children, I think I became an even bigger advocate of supporting women in the workforce. So that's always been a passion. I think that that's culturally something that we need to think about. And even though it seems like we support women in the workplace, As a country, there's many things that we need to work on. So I just sort of moved that along to understand that within technology, remember, I was coming from a world between retail management and advertising sales where it was pretty mixed of men and women and sometimes a little bit more on the female side. And then I get plopped into this world, and it's starkly different. And I didn't really understand. Technology, as I was beginning to learn, was really exciting. It was mentally challenging, at least as we moved into from a software product company to what became Chariot today. And we're in consulting. We get to work with all different types of companies, and it's really exciting.
It is,
and,
yes.
And I get to work with some really incredibly smart people. So I wasn't getting why there weren't more women here. no pun intended, it wasn't computing. And the women that I was meeting were more what I term periphery, and I don't mean that in a negative way, but women who, like myself, were in sales, marketing, HR, a lot of the support roles, and not in the software development side, not in the true, very more technical side. So I was doing some research, a little bit here, a little bit there, asking people. I also like to just sort of, as I sort of go back and think about how this became what it is and why it became what it is, I realized that I'm in a unique position. I work with all these developers. I have an understanding of, you know, what drives them. We've been blessed to have been early on in the open source software world. And if you're not familiar with open source, it's how a lot of the change in the way that software is developed happened, because there are a lot of people who got together on different projects. I'm really simplifying this, but they got together on these different projects outside of, large companies. This was just something that they had a passion for. They wanted to fix a problem, and they got together and worked together and created these free tools and technologies that developers could use. And the way that they did this was just very, very different than the regular regimented way of developing software. and it's just changed the way that the industry works now. That could be a whole other show, Susan, just about how
and I appreciate your simplifying it.
how open software has changed our culture, even.
Sure.
So, also understanding how to build community was something that I was working on. That's part of the open source world, as well as the community that we were beginning to build around the Philadelphia startup tech world.
Mm-hmm.
So I took all of those sort of mishmash of things and stuck them in a stew, and was able to bring some folks along with me who I had met and developed relationships with, and I knew that they were interested. And we started to really think about this problem, why we weren't seeing more women in these roles. And one of the things that we discovered early on as we were talking to some folks at Drexel and different CompSci departments was that there was an actual decline in the number of women and men who were matriculating into CompSci programs. And that was sort of curious to me because salaries were good. It was pretty stable 6 or 7 years ago. I know after the dot-com boom there were a lot of layoffs, but things have very much changed. And I started to think, well, if people aren't matriculating into college, something's happening in high school. And we were able to find two different studies that showed that girls were actually self-selecting in the tech careers around ninth grade. And that was very curious to me. Like, why was it at that point? And these two studies basically had the same, they were 5 years apart, but it was the same sort of things that were driving girls away. The image of what a technologist looks like or a scientist, the way that we treat smart girls and smart women in our society, how we don't always encourage them to pursue science, technology, engineering, and math careers. And especially in technology, science has gotten a little bit better. How parents and teachers are really unaware of the different careers that are available. Now in technology, it's the way that we portray a tech career is really old school. It's not just sitting in front of a computer. That is part of it, but it's not all of it anymore. Certainly not like what my dad was doing in the early 60s with the punch cards. Much, much different. And it's not always about boys in hoodies or young men in hoodies with, earphones. That's not always what it's like. And we really needed to change the viewpoint. So we put together sort of a plan of how we were going to attack this issue. And we modeled it on running a startup business. So we've got a group of people who have no nonprofit experience and very little education experience, and we came together to create this delivery model and this idea of understanding what was preventing middle school girls from really understanding what they were missing out on.
Well, and I think it's important what you said about the fact that there are so many different parts to a technology profession. You know, it's developing software is different from coding, which is different from, the
game design.
Yeah.
Which is different than e-textiles, which is different
exactly.
than database, which is different than robotics, which is different than.
There you go.
You know,
yeah,
cell
it's
phones,
endless.
Which is, and smartphones. And one of the things that's happened, especially since I've been involved in the tech arena, is that if you look over the last 15 years from when I started at the first technology job, what has changed in the last 15 years? Cloud computing was not even a thing then. And now it's everybody has at least an idea that things are up in the cloud.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another piece. And we don't know what's going to be in the next 5 to 10 years. Things are going to continue to change.
Very quickly.
Very quickly.
Very quickly. Tracy, you know what? We have to take a quick break for our sponsors. And when we come back, I want to talk to you about why you think it is so important to mentor and guide the next generation of young girls. We'll be right back.
There are 365 days to schedule a mammogram. Today is as good as any. Holy Redeemer Breast Care makes it easy. We offer the latest technology, like 3D mammography and automated breast ultrasound that help find cancers in dense breast tissue. Plus, our same-day readings mean same-day peace of mind. Make today the day you schedule a mammogram. It's easy to request an appointment online at holyredeemer.com/mammogram.
Since 1858, Mount St. Joseph Academy has been educating girls to be leaders, founders, and independent thinkers. Students are taught to be collaborative, courageous, compassionate, confident, and spiritual. In this student-centered environment, the young women are transformed by recognizing their own potential and are encouraged to use it to make a difference in the world. To learn more about Mount St. Joseph Academy, go to www.msjacad.org or call 215-233-3177. That's msjacad.org or 215-233-3177.
Welcome back, everyone, to this week of Women to Watch here on WWDB Talk 860 and WomenToWatch.net. I'm joined this afternoon by Tracy Wilson Rossman, who is the Chief Marketing Officer of Chariot Solutions, and she's also founder of Tech Girls. I wanted to talk to you about why, you know, from a personal standpoint, why you think it's so important to mentor and guide the next generation of young girls. I can certainly see, you know, some of the great things that are happening because we're having these conversations and there's so much awareness that certainly we didn't have when I was growing up. But what is it that you personally feel will make a difference in the world when we do this?
You know, it has to do with getting more perspectives and diversity into the world of innovation. And that's, you know, we can talk about tech, but to me, it's really about the innovation economy. And having this perspective, women, these girls look at issues from a different standpoint. Again, blanket statement.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want to generalize, but, I mean, we've seen it time and time again. So some of our girls say, you know, when we ask, what do you want to be when you grow up? What's your future career? A lot of them don't say they want to be a software developer. They'll say, I want to be a vet, but I understand now how technology can make me a better veterinarian.
Mm.
And these are 12 and 13-year-olds. This is not like they're 17, 18, 19-year-olds. They're very aware about solving problems. They want to solve challenges. That's how they want to use technology. So, you know, one of the things that we believe is if we give them the opportunity to explore and do it in a way that works for them, and we've spent a lot of time thinking about this and listening to them, that we're going to get better outcomes. You know, personally, I just believe, if I go back to what I said earlier, supporting women in the workplace, giving women more opportunities to think about different ways that they can stay in the workplace if they choose to. Also, these careers, we talk about the excitement and how creatively challenging they are and the type of people that you get to meet, but we don't talk about how much money you can make in these fields, and it's a lot. So allowing women to work in fields that pay more money is also about economic freedom.
Well, and also, you know, because women have such a natural desire to solve problems, big problems, you know, mm-hmm. world problems, if they're doing well economically, they're going to have opportunities to do that.
Yes, I agree. The other thing that we'll continue to see within this type of field is Now, not all jobs have this, but there is a flexibility in terms of being able to work from home.
Yes.
We run into a lot of software developers, this is just one example, who are they're freelancers and they work, maybe they'll only work 3 months out of the year. They may take some time off. If you're a good software developer, you will continually find work. It's just one of those things. So there's some flexibility that can be built in. That, you know, as we are in family rearing years, women and men need some flexibility. So some of these jobs are good for that as well.
Yeah.
And it's something to think about.
Exactly. Yes, definitely. Tracy, being in the technology industry yourself, I wondered if you have some thoughts about something that you'd like to see as far as trends and what's coming around the corner. It seems to me there's something new every day. There's certainly a lot of things being worked on that we don't know anything about. And then, you know, one day we wake up and look at the news and there's some, you know, incredible new tool that we can use both for professional and personal reasons. Is there something that you would like to see from a technology standpoint with respect to that?
Wow, that's a tough question, Susan.
I thought that's all you do is dream about the next, you know, the next tool.
Well, we, you know, at Chariot, our staff is able to help companies make some of those dreams happen from mm-hmm. the software development side. We definitely are seeing some interesting trends around home automation, some things that we hadn't thought about. That's a really tough one.
Well, we'll come back to that.
You know, what we're seeing, I mean, honestly, some of the things that we're seeing are the use of data to help solve larger issues, using information that's already locked in your systems from a business standpoint to understand your customers better or to solve other issues. That's definitely a trend that we're seeing, understanding the algorithms and, interesting enough, there's some PhDs now who are becoming technologists, and that's not really what they went to school for. They're becoming these data scientists.
Mm.
And we are seeing this convergence between hardware and software. That's what we're hearing from our clients.
Yeah. It is exciting. You know, as you said, it's something I certainly have become more interested in over the past couple of years since I've had this show, and just kind of, you know, running my own business, and having to do a lot of the technical piece of it
right.
on my own. No one told me, you know, I feel as if growing up, no one said, you know, here's something you should think about. It really is very interesting and there's a lot of creativity to it.
Exactly. Now, Susan, you're a technologist.
Well, I guess I am.
That is correct, because you're using technology to deliver the news.
Well,
you're
journalists slash technologists. I love that.
Exactly, exactly. And I think, you know, we have to think beyond just a software developer as a technologist.
Yes.
The title needs to grow, and there's within technology, just like within marketing right now, there's so many different flavors. Marketing just used to be, you know, there was a small track, but now there's all social media, and there's various things within social media, various tools that you have to be expert in, and there's your website, and
right.
there's all these different ways of delivering your message that didn't exist 6-7 years ago.
Yeah, exactly. You know, what is your take on, in the news this morning, there was a big article about, you know, the new shakeup at Twitter and over the weekend and multiple executives were let go. I wonder what it is, all of these different social media platforms, and they all are different and have different purposes, but you know, when you think of a site like Twitter, what is it that they need to do to compete with Facebook or Instagram? What are your thoughts?
Personally, I mean, I have my own personal thoughts. They may not be what the business world wants, but when you get right down to it, they have to make money.
Yeah, there you go.
So it doesn't matter how big how many users you have. It's a great platform. It's a great platform for getting the message out. But at the end of the day, how are they making money?
Right. So that's a, yeah, that's a big question. And of course it comes back to advertisers and sponsors and who wants to be visible on that platform.
And how you're able to allow, if that's the way that you're going, how are you allowing success for those people and have repeat success for your advertisers?
Yes.
So that there's revenue coming into the people who've invested in your company. It's just regular business. That doesn't change.
Yeah. Tell me what it is. Chariot Solutions was recognized as one of the best places to work in Philadelphia, and I wondered, you know, wanted to give you a minute to talk about what it is that they do differently.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, you just made my my boss happy.
Good. I hope he or she is listening.
So when we were founded, we were moving from this other company, and one of the things that we had taken this core group. And we really thought carefully about how we were forming the new company. And at that point, the way that we put our company together was much different than a lot of consulting firms on the East Coast. We were really based more on what I term a West Coast model, and I'm putting that in quotes. It was the technologists were driving the business versus the salespeople. And that's a little bit different. So our goal was to have the best of the best, creating, the best software for our clients, and hiring these folks who, at that point, we were very early in the Java space. These folks really may not have been interested in just staying in one company for a short period of time working on a product or one. They wanted to grow. They wanted to explore. And we set it up for them in such a way that we're able to do that, that we put together this group of technologists who are constantly learning and able to deliver the really forward-thinking technology solutions for our clients. And we're allowing them to work together. It's very interesting here. We have the smartest people that I've ever been able to work with. It's great. So you'd think that having all of these really smart people, there'd be all these really big egos.
Mm.
But there's not. It's the type of person that we hire as well. It's not just about can you do the technology. It's also about the type of person that you are.
Yeah, that's very important. Right. And how are you going to interact and work with the rest of the team?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's really important. So we have all of these people who could be the big fish in big ponds all working together. And one of the things around technology is that even though we're working in Java and these all these different open source technologies, each of the technologists here, all the consultants here, have sort of an area of specialty that they like. So almost everyone is an expert in a different area. So everybody learns from each other, and everyone can teach each other.
Yeah, that's the best way to be working. You know, we use the term collaboration on the show all the time. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it really is one of the most important elements of any company, business, whether small or large, that everyone is working together, continuing to want to learn and be the best. And as you said, lacking ego is – you know, is a great way to be doing it in, you know, the best possible environment.
And if you allow me one more comment on this, one of the things that's really important to us is how we hire. It's not, like I said, it's not just about who can write the best code. It's also, is this somebody that you want to work with? So we really don't work with outside recruiters. Our folks are the ones that actually do all of the interviewing. And even though it takes a longer time to find the right people, it's really the best thing to do because we spend a lot of time figuring it out, but we also wind up having, you know, a really high retention rate and a long retention rate of our folks.
Yeah, that's terrific, because then you have that loyalty.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's get back to the tech girls for a few minutes. I wanted to find out what are the, you know, actionable things that you're doing with these young girls that are members.
Sure. So what we're doing is we create these short interactive workshops, and we're getting IT professionals, and now we're also getting folks who have the IT background, so they may be college students or high school students, to teach. So when we first started, Tech Girls was putting on all of these events, and over the last 2 years, we've been flipping the model a bit and getting more people who are either part of a company or they're doing it on their own, or they just are raising their hands and saying they want to teach, and they work with a group, like a group of Girl Scouts, and we're doing a little volunteer matching. But we're doing less of our own events and having more people do events on their own. So we're giving our materials out for free. We created this program called Tech Shops in a Box. We have all these lesson plans, which are called tech shops, and we put them in a virtual box, which has an operations playbook. When you open the box, it gives you all the tools that you need to run your own tech shop.
That's very cool.
It is very cool.
Yeah.
We're really proud of it. And
yeah.
We've been doing this for, we're in our fifth year, and we're really proud to say we have close to 30 tech shops. They're free to use.
That's one of the best parts. That's
exactly. They're free. We've got to figure out our revenue model. We're working on that. But over the last year, we've increased the number of girls that we've been able to reach through this delivery model, and we believe that this year, this school year, 2015-2016. We will work with double the amount of girls in 1 year than we have over the last 4 years.
That's fantastic.
It is fantastic. We're not only working in Philadelphia, because this is virtual, anybody can come in, sign up, and get an idea of the type of materials we have. So we've gone national, and we've also had tech shops in a box that have been run internationally.
That is terrific. And I'm guessing if one of our listeners has a daughter that she feels would be interested, if they go to techgirls.com, they can get all
it's
the information.
Techgirls.org.
Oh, .org. Yes, yes.
.org.
.org.
Let's talk about who would come to our site. So
great.
If you volunteer, you would just go to run your own tech shop, sign up, and we'll get you trained and help you figure out whether you want to run your own tech shop or work with one of our organizations that come in. If you're an organization and you have approximately 15 girls that you want to have learn about different technology, go to run your own tech shop, sign up. And if you're a parent, what you should do is sign up for our newsletter, and we'll be sending out information. And if you don't have a Tech Girls tech shop that's running in your area, sign up for Tech Shops in a Box, run your own tech shop in a box, and we'll get you on the list. And maybe they have 15 friends, or they have a company who would be willing to run one. So there's multiple ways of getting these materials taught and inspiring these girls. And one thing that I would like to say is, what's our impact? So we did a survey 2 years ago, and we just completed a survey last summer. And one of the questions we asked, are you more likely to consider a career in technology after attending one of our workshops? And we were at 70%, and now we're up to 86%.
Oh, that's great. That's fantastic. I wanted to ask you if you have any and it might be too early, but a success story, perhaps, of one of the girls that's gone through your program and is doing some great things.
Well, we do. We have We had a couple of girls who were a little bit older, but we have our first, she's now a sophomore, over at the Worcester Institute of Technology. She and her three sisters came, so we were working with girls who were 14 to 9 at the time when we first started with them. And we've been able to watch them grow up. It's amazing. Mm-hmm. And her mom says that, you know, even though she was very, very directed to becoming an engineer, that without the support that we were able to give her, she probably would have fallen off track.
Mm.
And, you know, that's one of the success stories that we like to talk about. You know, we're getting girls who definitely are identifying as interested. So one of the things that people ask us are, you know, wouldn't they have gone on to have a tech career? And we believe that there's so many drop-off points that stop them, derail them from continuing, that what we're doing is allowing them to see, meet other girls and create a support system and meet women and men who want to help them along with their career choice, and also give them the confidence to know that they can do this.
Well, that was my very next question, because I think it's so important what type of messaging that young girls are receiving and what is the language that we're using when we speak to them. And confidence and self-esteem is a huge part of the, you know, the puzzle for both young boys and girls. But young girls in particular, you know, we can say historically it's been something that often gets in the way of them pursuing what it is they want to do. I wanted to ask you what is your messaging? What is the language you use when you're talking to these young girls about the fact that they really can pursue any field they're interested in?
Well, one of the things that we were very upfront with them, and I think one of the things that we say is, hey, sometimes when you're working with code or other types of technologies, things don't go right. It's experimenting, and sometimes you fail and you have to try again, and when you try again, you learn something new, and that's part of the whole experience. And allowing these girls to understand that that's not a failure but actually a success,
mm-hmm.
Is a way of changing the mindset. Also, the way that we have structured our programs, it's not a lot of talking, it's a lot of doing.
That's good.
And a lot of exploration, and that is what they told us that they wanted. So that's really important, that we're listening to our client. I know that sounds a little weird that these 13-year-old, 12-year-olds are our client, but they are,
mm-hmm.
and making sure that, you know, they like what we're putting out there. The other thing that we're telling them is that technology, there's a variety of technology. So not only do we have coding classes, but we also have workshops that involve 3D printing and hardware and game design and podcasting, like we're doing right now. Well, actually, you're live streaming, and video casting, and you know, we have UX and UI, which is user design, where we don't even use a computer. They're actually designing a mobile app with pencil and paper. So we're allowing them to see the options. And I think that that's really important, that there's choices and that there's various ways. And sometimes they tie together and sometimes they don't. Collaboration. We have a week-long technology entrepreneur boot camp that we've put together, which is now ready for prime time so other people can teach it. It's extremely fascinating to see how these girls come together and create these amazing product ideas. So, and I think you can hear the passion in my voice around this.
Yeah. Well, here's an idea.
The messaging
for
us is really important.
Yeah, it is. And, you know, unfortunately, they get some horrific messaging, you know, that comes from all different directions. But maybe you're doing this already, but, you know, how about a platform where the young girls themselves go out and speak to the other young girls and tell them how much fun they're having and how cool it is, the work that they're doing?
Well, Susan, it's funny that you mentioned that. So we're getting to a point now where some of our girls are older, or we're getting girls in high school who are self-identifying and they want to do something, and there's no place for them to go.
Mm-hmm.
So we're allowing them to be teachers, to be instructors.
Good. Yeah. I think that, you know, young people
so
talking to young people is very effective.
But we're allowing them to be the teacher, and I think that that's important because it increases their confidence because they learn they're teaching what they know, which
mm-hmm.
allows them to further learn what they're experts in, they're also role modeling for the younger girls, and it's great. We're just starting with this program, so we're hoping to roll out the student partnership for high schools and colleges. We're experimenting this spring, and we're rolling it out. So if anyone's interested, please sign up.
Good, good. Yeah, and yeah, keep me posted on that so I can, share that information and the updates. I'm going to, of course, follow up and put all the information out there and links, but just so the listeners know, Tech Girls is TECHGIRLZ. So it's not GIRLS, in case they're looking for you. In the last minute or two that we have, Tracy, I wanted to know, you're involved in so many different things, and I commend you for that. I think how wonderful for you that you're working in a field that you are passionate about and you love, and you're giving back at the same time. Do you have any other, future goals or plans outside of what you're doing?
Keep figuring out how to take the passion that I have in my life and put it out there. And I've been very fortunate to meet all these great people who allow me to do what I do.
Good. That's great. Listen, I thank you so much for telling your story today and the good work that you're doing. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Susan, for your time today.
Thanks, Tracy. That's it, everyone, for this week of Women to Watch. Make sure you check out our website at womentowatch.net, and we'll be back next Monday.